Welcome to the Marketing Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Barker. Today, I have with me Panos Siosos, the CEO and co-founder of LearnWorlds, an all-in-one platform for creating and selling e-courses. It's designed such that brands, marketers, and agencies can craft great learning experiences for their customers. On today's episode, Panos shares his journey creating LearnWorlds and how their platform helped marketers educate their customers. All right, you guys. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Marketing Growth Podcast. I have Panos here from LearnWorlds. He's the CEO and also one of the three co-founders. I'm excited about having you on the podcast today, man.
Hi, Shane. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks for making the time. Like I said, I know we've been going back and forth, and we actually put a review up on the website that everybody's got to check out. We'll actually put that in the show notes if you want to better understand. But the thing is we did that. We did the review, and I was like, this isn't enough. We need to be able to talk to these guys and be able to get them on the show. So here we are today. Once again, thanks for taking the time. The way that we usually run the show is we just kind of want to get to know a little bit about yourself, and then we'll kind of jump into the company and all the upsides, the good things, and the fun things that you guys do, and we'll kind of take it from there. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. Well, cool. Let's start off with yourself. Why don't you tell us, hey, where you're from? I want to get into a little bit of that, and then like where you grew up and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, I'm Greek, so I grew up in Greece. That also shows, I guess, from my name. The three co-founders were all Greek. So that's where we started.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've only been to Greece. I actually been to Greece twice, and it is, talk about the food and the culture and amazing people. I mean, nothing, but it was like Santorini and Naxos, it was like all the different islands, which, you know, you can only imagine what I was into back then. I mean, I imagine potentially maybe party situation, potentially. But now I've grown up a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit, but just a little outside of that. But so cool. So you grew up there. How big was your family? I know a lot of the Greek families are usually pretty big.
I think we were small for Greek size. Two siblings. I have a brother who's 10 years older. So he used to be the early adopter, taking the fights, so that I had an easier path, I guess, with my parents. So grew up in a small city outside Athens, a shipyard, basically, with lots of unemployment, people working heavy shifts, lots of industrial accidents. My father was an educator, and the fathers of all three co-founders used to be teachers. So we started by understanding how privileged we were in this setting, and also what could be the transformative power of education, of being able to learn and go ahead of above your position, or where, I don't know, circumstances put you in the first place. So I guess these are some of the very first things that really made a difference in what we would do eventually.
So did you guys meet like at an early age, or was it, because I want to go into obviously a little bit about yourself, but I'm just intrigued by the fact that everybody's parents were teachers, were educators.
Yeah, we didn't meet in our younger age. We met in university. So we go back too far in the past. We've been working together for about 25 years. So we met in the university, but we had a similar path. And I guess this is, we discovered that a few years ago. That was probably one of the parts that really brought us together: common values, common family tradition, and the value that we put in education.
I love that. We're going to touch on that a little later. So what are some interesting facts about anything when you grew up? Is there anything that people don't know? I mean, anything that maybe culturally or anything? I'm always kind of intrigued the way people, there's always people have some kind of interesting fact.
Yes. Well, I guess, as I mentioned, my very first experiences were in a quite difficult setting, where I understood that I was privileged, and that was that I also understood my obligation to help other people, and understood that as my father was teaching students and kids and trying to get them to do something better with their lives, I guess that was a quite important formative experience for me. Another formative experience was that at the age of 12, we migrated for a couple of years in Germany, and that gave me a quite a multinational approach and multicultural approach. I picked up the language. I saw the industrial part of Europe, like what people can do and what you can do once you have the resources in their organized society. So that was also quite quite important lesson for me at that young age.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. You know, I did. My family did a lot of traveling, and it's deeply engraved in me, just culturally, and you know, food and culture and the way people are. I love that. I mean, that's one thing that I kind of pride myself on, is that kind of, you know, understanding other cultures and saying, hey, understand how people do things, because you know, America doesn't always have the best. Let me think, how do I put this nicely? I don't know. Sometimes people, you know, U.S. thinks that they rule everything, and it's nice to go to other cultures where it's like, hey, listen, we don't rule everything, you know, and there's some cultures out here that are actually better than that, in my opinion, when it comes to food and other stuff, is actually a lot better. There's a lot of things that shine in other cultures when it, you know, over the US. But anyways, we're not going to get into that today. What I do want to talk about is, are you still in Greece? Are you living?
No, I live in Cyprus, which is close by. It's almost the same thing. Different country, also part of the EU. The largest part is Greek speaking. But it's also much warmer. Taxation is amazing for creating and building a business. I happen to be here with my wife. She's a university professor, so she moved in first, and I had to follow in order to be together. But it happened to be a great place to set up the business and keep growing the business. I mean, from an organizational point of view, you might remember Greece was in a very deep hole a few years ago with the financial crisis. Once we started the business, it was even at some point it was getting quite difficult, especially in regards to the European customers, to get them to accept us and to be certain that we can deliver what we were promising. While we didn't have the same thing with the US, we were talking with US customers and people saying, wow, amazing, I've been to Santorini, happy to do business with you guys. But there was a certain attitude for 2-3 years in Europe where we're talking with potential customers, and they weren't sure whether we would be part of Europe, whether we could be able to support and offer their services. So that was quite difficult for us at that point, also from a mental point of view. But it's also what drove us to go directly to the US market and to go directly with a market that was very mature, very accepting, very ready to test an unproven, innovative product. And that is what gave us really an edge when it came to growing the business and advancing the platform.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because, I mean, I do remember when there was some financial problems with Greece, but I think it's pretty crazy. You know, we don't realize how much that affects startups, right? And how much, I mean, right? Because it's kind of like you're bringing up some things that I necessarily wouldn't have thought of, but you're like, wow, there are some things that absolutely were some roadblocks. You're going, wait a second, like, we're going to be fine. We're, you know, Greece is having some issues financially, but we're still a startup and things are going well with us and we're doing good. Don't worry. We're stable. We've got things going, but I can only imagine it's like, you know, it's the things that you have to break through. I mean, it's already hard as an entrepreneur, and now it makes it, you know, and then when you have your country that you're like, usually you want to say your country strong. And, you know, once again, we all have the things that they go through, but I can only imagine, but you guys made it through that. I mean, and here you are. So that's awesome. So
it was a great, sorry to interrupt, that was a great lesson on how to grow a business. It forced us to be resilient. It forced us to be cash efficient. And we were a bootstrap business. So actually we're spending our own money and the money of like parents and spouses. So we valued every single, and to this day, we value every single dollar that we can get. And that's super, super important. Like no customer, no dollar that gets into the company is nothing we take for granted. We know that we have to fight for everything. And we try to keep that regardless of MRR and growth and all this great stuff that is happening. We still remember those days where we had to fight for a single euro, and we try to make this part of our culture.
It's absolutely important. I think that, you know, the thing is what we go through as a company to be able to grow it. And especially if there's hard times, which there always is, right? I mean, it's not always just this trajectory of, you know, up to a million, you know, ARR, right? I mean, it's like, you have to be able to, there's so many things that need to happen. And I think that's awesome that it kind of like taught you guys like, hey, well, you know, every dollar that comes in, we need to be frugal. We need to make sure, know where it's going. And it just puts a different spin on it. I think, you know, a lot of the times startups, when they get big funding, sometimes that's obviously that can be helpful for growth and to scale. But the other side of it too, is that their burn rate becomes extremely high because it's not their money, right? And so you have a situation where you're just burning through cash. And sometimes you know, you got to be real careful of that. And when you're putting, you know, when you're putting your dollar out and your wife's dollar out there and your wife's going, hey, you got to make sure this is the right decision. You're like, don't worry, honey. I got it. I promise. I swear. I'm pretty sure. You know, I get that. I get that. I think there's some huge value in that. I mean, we did the same thing. My son, raising my son, was like, oh, my kids just, you know, went to a private high school. And he's like, oh, my kids are, you know, all of his friends are getting like a brand new Mercedes. He's like, what am I getting? I'm like, you're getting a car payment. You're getting whatever you can afford. Like, of course, we chipped in and I said, whatever you put in, I'll match it. But I'm like, hey, it's a different school of thought over here. You're not, there's no silver lining. You got to work, bro. I mean, I work, you know, got to make it happen. So what was your major in school? What'd you major in?
Computer science. We all studied computer science. So that was, we started 1995. So that was, I guess, the early ages of internet and computing. In fact, my thesis was one of the first where I was doing an e-learning application working online, active server pages back then. So we were doing some pretty crazy stuff with server side code and JavaScript and stuff like that. Very fun days.
In 95, you were talking about this?
95, we started. I was doing that. My thesis was in 1998, so it was quite fun. So all three of us, we studied computer science together, and then all three of us, we did postgraduate studies in e-learning. So e-learning is part of what we were training to do. We were researching, creating e-learning applications, doing publishing papers, going to conferences. So my PhD was on computer-assisted assessment, how you can set up, you know, questionnaires and applications for assessing knowledge. That's where we come from.
That's awesome, man. I love always hearing the background. You've been around for a little while, my friend. I can tell you've got a little gray in your beard as I do. That shows I think we're a little smarter these days. We've learned a lot through the years.
Well, we were going back watching some old, very old videos, some like grainy footage. We started working on our very first e-learning platform back in 1999. So as you can imagine, the user interface was dreadful, but the features, the core of even what we offer today was already there because the science was already there, but there was nobody around us back then who could like nudge us to create a business. This is things that people didn't do in this part of Europe back, I don't know, 20 years ago. It was impossible to do a startup. You needed like servers and hardware and all this stuff. So it was unimaginable. So if we were in the US or somewhere else, we probably could have done something similar 20 years ago, but we didn't have the know-how. We were just researchers. We were on an academic path, trying to become professors and stuff like that. So this is all we knew back then.
I love it. That's funny, man. I mean, it's just that 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago at this point, that you guys had the idea of the e-learning thing. And then here it is coming to fruition. So what was your first job out of college?
Software engineer. Right after I got my degree, worked as a software engineer in a small business. And after a few months, I think after 5 or 6 months, it was .com boom back then. So funding started coming in. So I found myself being the CTO and having 10 developers working for me and with me. So that was quite wild. It lasted a couple of years. At some point, funding dried up, or customers stock market started going down. But it was a very fun ride while it lasted, and it was also a great experience, a great lesson, understanding that the value of what you offer is not necessarily associated with the funding or the stock market, but you have to have actual customers that are paying for what you offer, and you have to offer actual value to those users.
I know, that's we all learned that the hard way, didn't we? We're like, boy, when the funding dries up, now we got to figure out how to bring in money. This is terrible. Well, this is, you know, that's how it goes. Well, that's what we talk about, that burn rate, right? It's like, hey, you got to make sure you got the money coming in as well. So what I wanted to talk about was the monetization of your knowledge. And I think because of this currently in this COVID, you know, situation, I see a lot of people that are obviously transitioning to online. And I'm seeing this obviously with a lot of brick and mortar businesses. And I think people not realizing and understanding that they can monetize their knowledge, right? And I kind of want to touch on that a little bit, because obviously Learn Worlds, that's what we're looking at. It's like, I think the common misconception, and I know even myself, I've dealt with this, is like, yeah, but nobody really cares what I know, like, or what I've got, right? Like there's, yeah, I've been doing this for 25 years or gotten probably longer now, but like, yeah, but I, you know, I think I can add some value to some things, but I just don't know. And I think it's the monetization, realizing that you really do, that there is something there that can be really interesting. So what I wanted to talk about was kind of, cause you've done something similar. I mean, you went from like doing policy research, right? Cause I looked at your LinkedIn, you were doing policy research to entrepreneurship. You know, and I think what you learned through that whole process and transitioning into entrepreneurship is very interesting in regards to how you monetize that. So kind of tell me how you, what was your process there?
So as researchers, we always had the niche for creating actual platforms that people would use. So we were doing stuff in the university setting, academic setting. We had a couple hundred students, perhaps testing it like guinea pigs, like testing what we had built, and then we were forgetting about that. But we were always working, because we were quite hands-on, so we were building our own tools and we were building our own platforms. We always wanted to create a business. That's something that we had in mind. That was a very slow process, so it took us a few years. We did different jobs after completing our PhDs. We worked on different projects and here and there. I worked in, as we mentioned, I worked in Brussels for the European Union for research and innovation policy. That's the equivalent of being like in Congress, you know, and working for R&D. And every few months we were talking together about the things that we could do. Like, is there a way where we can take the state of the art of e-learning, the things that we have learned, and put them into an actual product that people would pay and use? And that was a quite slow process. We started in 2011. At that point, it was becoming evident that there was demand for skills online and people were trying to find new ways to learn stuff and learn skills outside of traditional academia. And traditional academia wasn't fast enough, wasn't adapting to the needs of the market. So at that point, you had companies like Lynda coming online or Team Treehouse, where you could just go online and start learning, I don't know, Photoshop or web development or something like that. So at that point, we realized that all our expertise, like instructional video and computer-assisted assessment and all this theory, could come together into a product that would fit to the new ways that people were learning. Because if you wanted to, and increasingly so today, if you want to become a web developer, probably the worst decision that you can do is go to a university and spend a few years there and get a few hundred thousands of debt. There are faster ways to do that and better ways to do that. So even companies like Google and Facebook, they get some of the top people that come out of universities, and universities for certain types of knowledge will never be replaced. You want your doctor coming out of the best university. But when it comes to Google hiring developers, they get them perhaps from a university, or they train them. They give them the actual portions of knowledge that they need to be immediately applied. So that was our process, and we discovered, we understood that there was a demand there, something that we could cover, bringing in our own expertise and creating platforms that would be much better than the things that were available out there. And I have to say that the main driver for us for doing something like that was that as researchers, we were very pissed off by the kind of platforms that were available out there. Most of them seem to approach learning, I don't know, e-learning just like throwing a PDF or a video at somebody, like giving you a PDF and say, okay, you have been trained. But that's not how we learn. That's not what you do when you learn about marketing, or when I'm learning about entrepreneurship. You need access to the content. You need engagement. You need interactivity. You need a network of fellows and peers who will be working with you, and you will be exchanging knowledge. So that was what we understood from our theory and from the practice. And we thought that there is space for us to create an innovative business and make money out of it, and also help people in the process.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you're talking about building, it's not just training, but it's building the community, right? It's building everything around that plays into that so that you can be successful, because it isn't just reading a PDF or watching one video. It's the support behind that, right? Of being able to interact with everybody and the follow-up and interaction things that I think that become, you know, starting the groups or whatever that may be. And that's pretty much what you guys have done at LearnWorlds, right? I mean, that's what you guys have built. I mean, how long ago did you guys start the company?
Well, we were, I guess, anti-lean. So we spent a couple of years creating the platform almost without showing it to anybody. That's e-learning is and learning is a quite slow process and deep process. So just doing, I don't know, a prototype in a weekend, it's not enough to measure whether you build something that is like sufficient and substantial. So it took us 2 years. We were perfectionists. That's something that we hopefully are now immune to, this kind of perfectionist. So we wanted to build, you know, the perfect platform and have everything there. And in fact, the first iteration of our platform probably had more features in terms of e-learning than some that we have now. So at some point, we had to make this more practical for actual users and really trim some of the things that weren't so important as the market then taught us. So that's how we started. A couple of years, we were spending our own money, creating the business and creating the actual platform. And then at some point, we came out and started looking for customers. So it wasn't the best kind of approach in terms of like how lean you can start a business with an MVP and stuff like that. But I guess in our case, because e-learning and learning is a difficult subject, probably you cannot just do with a small prototype. You have to go deep and start looking for the actual problem.
Yeah, I mean, because there's so many moving pieces to it, right? It's like to be lean and do e-learning is not impossible, but it's difficult because there's a lot of moving. It's not just like you're going to go do this one thing and this is it. There's a lot of factors that play into it, a lot of variables that play into that that affect the potential outcome. So I could see how going kind of big and then saying, okay, out of these, whatever, 10 features, how do we scale back to 5 features and then really make those the best features in regards to, you know, being able to move the product forward. Before we move on, I'd like to take a short break from this conversation. I wanted to have a word directly with all of our listeners. If you need help building a strong online presence or running your marketing campaigns, you can always contact my team. We offer services including influencer marketing, content marketing, online PR, and much more. For more details, check out my website, shanebarker.com. That's shanebarker.com. And now back to the conversation. So in this whole thing we've got going on with COVID-19, how did it affect your guys' business? I mean, how did things go with you guys on your side?
We were lucky to already have a successful product with a great working funnel and also some great branding. So we were quite we started from a great place, but COVID really blew the lid off. So it was everything almost overnight. After, I guess, the 15th of March 2020, when most of countries started going into lockdowns, the entire funnel really tripled almost overnight. So everything about, you know, acquisition and all the channels, organic and affiliates and conversions, everything started working much, much better. So it was great that we were already in that place. And in fact, we truly believe that COVID didn't invent things out of the box or didn't just foment changes out of the, I don't know, out of thin air, but it really multiplied trends that were already there. So everything that we had been doing in the past few years, building the platform, creating our branding and creating the tools for the early adopters, COVID really made this self-evident to everybody that now you have to be online. 2020 will be remembered for many years, and there was lots of devastation around the world and lots of loss for our fellow humans. But it's also the year that learning turned digital. So everybody understands now that you need to have a business model. And even if you, I mean, things will go back to normal, hopefully soon. There's lots of things that will change. But I don't think that at any point a business will get, I don't know, 200 employees in a hotel for 5 hours of PowerPoint training. This will never happen again. Hopefully we'll get in a hotel, I don't know, for a cocktail or something or a party, but not for training. There are other ways to do that, much more efficient, effective, measurable, and scalable. And this is what everybody now understands. So even those that thought that learning is like a nice to have, and I'm a trainer, I have my day business, or I have my training business, I travel, or I do what kind of webinars, they realize that e-learning now is a must have. And also, the scaling potential is immense. Like if you're a trainer, I don't know, yoga trainer, coach, whatever, how many hours per week can you teach? Like 40, 50, 60, if you're lucky, and then probably you're exhausted. But once you take your business online, then you're no longer limited by the number of students you can reach in your city or in your country. You can have a global audience available to you 24/7 for selling your courses. And this is the switch that people did, so that we truly believe, and we see it by customers every day, that even when hopefully COVID goes away very, very soon, the way of doing business online and the way of training will have changed forever. And we want to be part of the solution for the post-COVID era of learning, where we'll try to do things much, much better and much scalable, much more scalable for our users.
Yeah, you guys are in the right place at the right time. I'll tell you, so I do think the, you know, the COVID, everything, the COVID situation obviously has affected the world. I mean, I do know that obviously because of remote working, I think remote working and e-learning were the two things that were absolutely, I mean, you know, now you have Google and you have everybody saying, hey, everybody can work remote, which is awesome. Guess what that means? That means e-learning, right? So that naturally plays into e-learning. You guys were right place, had the concept. I mean, you guys only started this 20 years ago conceptually, right? And then you guys all of a sudden, boom, happened. And then you're like, yes, man, we're the right place, right time. And good things are happening. And what I want to touch on a little bit at the end of this is when we talk about, because we talk about, you kind of talked about, you know, if you're a yoga instructor, obviously if you're working, let's say 40, 50, 60 hours a week, you're working 60, then you're probably, you know, anyways, probably extremely tired over the week. And you can only work those that many hours with a local setting, right? With a local, you know, clientele. And obviously e-learning and Learn Worlds opens that up to the world. So how would you, let's say if I'm a local yoga instructor, I mean, how do you monetize your knowledge? Like, how do you do something like that? What would you recommend in that situation?
Sometimes I say that online courses are the ebooks of 2020. Everything that we used to do, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago with an ebook where you can position yourself as an expert and that you can grow your personal brand or attracting leads for your business. And more importantly, directly monetizing or selling a digital product. This is, you can do that now much more effectively with an online course. So the easiest thing that people can do is just create a free course. We always say that this is the best lead magnet that we have experienced. We are creating checklists and ebooks for our business as well. Online courses are the best lead magnet that you can create. So starting from that, you can create an amazing funnel, attracting more people even to your main business or to your shop. This is something that it's quite important that education is the best form of marketing. It's very subtle. It's not pushy. It's not aggressive. You're not selling. You're giving to people something valuable. And so the first part is to just get them through the door, and you can do that very, very easily with a free mini course. We always say to people, sometimes they try to create a free course that is quite big and elaborate, a few hours of learning. You don't have to do that. You can just start by teaching a concept for 10 or 20 minutes, something that your customers or your audience is interested about. You can start just by that. And then you can, once you validate that there's sufficient demand around that subject, that people are willing to hear you out and see what you have to do, then you can create a paid offering. It's as easy as that. And you can play your strengths. You can use video if you're working with that. You can use text. You can use audio. You can use assessments. It's very, very easy now to create multiple forms of knowledge and multiple types of knowledge, combine them in a nice package, and you have a digital product to sell. It's quite, we're always amazed by how inventive our customers are and the different types of courses that they can create and the different niches that they address. So it doesn't have to be an academic subject, or it doesn't have to be something very, very elaborate. We've seen some amazing niche businesses being created on very interesting subjects, and people making good money on top of those subjects.
I love that. I mean, I just love it, because it's like the thing is because we're going heavy into the courses too. Because I, you know, used to teach a class over at UCLA, and I've done plenty of trainings and classes and stuff. But the e-course thing, I love that you said that 20, like like, you know, ebooks were, you know, so whatever, 2019 and before, and now we've got courses being 2020 and above is like, hey, like, let me show you the knowledge, right? There's one thing to read a ebook or to kind of do some things out, and let me go ahead and do a display and actually show you what we got going on. I love that, because once again, I think that's going to be a big thing in regards to the future, especially when you talk about it being from a lead generation perspective, right? Being able to pull in leads for that, having a, and I also love the fact that it doesn't have to be, I think a lot of people think it needs to be, you know, 19 videos and this all an hour long and this, and you need to go spend, you know, $100,000 to do that. You don't, you know, it can be a mini course. People have the mini courses to pull in for lead gen, to be able to pull in some people for, to buy into a bigger course or buy into whatever else you've got going on the backside. Thanks, Panos. It's been an intriguing conversation, and I'm sure our audience has learned a lot about why businesses need to monetize their knowledge. Our learning does not stop here, though, dear listeners. In fact, in the next episode, Panos tells us about how your business can launch a successful online course.